Blog Talk Radio.
Good Saturday morning out there in radio land and internet world to all of our friends, book lovers, anybody who's looking for tips to market their small business or just something that they can use to help improve and advance and get to the next level in their personal life. You came to the right place and definitely the right show today. I want to welcome you to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for this Saturday, June the 8th. I have to always start by saying thank you, thank you, thank you for joining us here this morning. It's just an absolute joy to have you here with us as we head into our 10th year. I can hardly believe it. And we have a wonderful, wonderful guest that I'm excited to introduce you to today. But for those who might just be tuning in for the first time, I want to introduce myself. But before I do, I got to say thank you again to our loyal listeners who've been with us for going on 10 years. You have no idea how much I appreciate and enjoy you. For those who are tuning in for the first time, I want to introduce myself. As I said, I'm your host, Denise Turney. And like I always say, I'm coming to you live from the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Thank you again for your support. And please don't let another day pass before you pick up a copy of the amazing book that is Love Pour Over Me. And you can get a copy of Love Pour Over Me today through Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Google Books, eBook It, Walmart. If you don't see it on the bookstore shelf, just ask the clerk for it because it's carried by the largest book distributors in the world. And what do you get when you pick up Love Pour Over Me? Mystery, romance. You get awesome friendships. And I do mean friendships that stretch across decades. You know how you meet people when you're young and you promise to keep in touch, but you fall out of touch? Not in Love Pour Over Me. You get a lot of high chase scenes, things that keep you on the edge of your seat, and loads of entertainment, and a love between a man and a woman and a father and a son that I don't think you will forget. And again, you can pick up a copy of Love Pour Over Me at any online or offline retailer. And now, to the moment I know you guys have been waiting for, we're going to go and meet our special guest today. And today's off-the-shelf feature guest, she's been here before, and I've crossed paths with her probably, I know, well over maybe almost going on 15 years now, which is hard to believe, when she had her started out with her website, where she was helping and support so many other people, mothers and authors, and she's just been so supportive of others. It's an honor to be able to have her on and to support her. So who is she? She's an entrepreneur, a public speaker, website and graphic designer, book promoter, and she is an author, and I'm so excited. I'm so excited that she started to publish her own work. Her short story, Birthing Pains, is included in the anthology Home Again, Stories of Restored Relationship. She's also the author of the book When Rain Falls, and her latest book, When Memory Fades, although before we came on live, she told me that she just released a self-help book, and she can give us that title here on the air. But her latest is When Memories Fade, and this awesome, awesome woman is Tyora Moody, and she's online at tyoramoody.com. I'll spell that for you, tyoramoody.com. tyoramoody.com. You can hop over there actually now if you're on the internet or your mobile device while you listen to today's show and check out more of her work. We're absolutely honored to have her with us again this morning. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Tyora.
Thank you, Denise. It's good to be here.
So good to have you with us. She said she has a cold, but she doesn't sound like it. She's sounding good. Tyora is sounding good this morning. So, again, thank you. And again, as I was congratulating you off the air, I want to congratulate you on the air on having your new book, When Memories Fade, released. I want to ask you, how soon after you finished When Rain Falls did you start writing on When Memories Fade?
Well, I had shopped When Rain Falls around to get the book deal. So I got the book deal in 2010. And it kind of took a while to really just make sure that that was edited the way the publisher wanted. So I really didn't start one memory stayed until last year in 2012, and believe it or not, it was right around the time that When Rain Falls released. So I learned a great lesson last year. When you are with a publisher, you kind of release a book, you get a deadline. So I was learning how to balance marketing the book and writing a book at the same time.
And working, right?
Yes, and working,
oh,
doing things for other people. I wrote When Memories Fade in about 3 months compared to the almost on and off 2 years that it took for When Rain Falls. So it was a big difference in writing.
Wow. You wrote it in, you said, 3 months?
Yes, I wrote it in 3 months. I started
the end
of March, and I was finished around this time last year.
But then you had to go through the process of getting it edited, right?
Yes. Yeah, that was, by the time I got to 3 months, that was probably, I had a second draft. I had wrote the first draft, and then I was on my second draft. And then, yeah, I did, during the summer, it was edited during the summer. And when you're with a publishing company, it goes through two edits. It gets, a major edit first,
okay,
and then you see it come back to you later, kind of in the final copy where you can't really change anything, but it goes through a copy edit where you go through how to catch any, misspelled words or words that are not in place. So it kind of goes through.
Okay. Now, your first book, When Rain Falls, I know was picked up by Urban Christian Kensington Publishers. Is that who your new book was under? And then I want another question for our off-the-shelf listeners who want to become published authors. Can you explain, I know you did it the last time you were on, but for those who didn't catch that interview, if you could talk about the process of landing a publisher and particularly a multi-book deal.
When Memories Fade was the second book. I received a 2-book deal from Urban Christian.
Okay.
And so When Memories Fade was the fulfillment of that 2-book deal. And just to let your listeners know, I actually went to a writer's conference. It was more of it was called the Faith and Fiction Retreat. So it was for readers and authors.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were some publishers there. So I pitched the When Rain Falls story. Actually, when I went to the publisher, I pitched the whole series. I pitched When Rain Falls. I had not written One Memory Fade yet, but I kind of knew I was going to write it. And I also pitched the 3rd book in the series that I also had not written, but I kind of knew I was going to write in the future.
Okay.
So there's 2 rejections. So, of course, Urban Christian was the one that gave me the 2-book deal. And like I said, once you get a deal with a traditional publisher, they expect you to meet deadlines so that they can, they usually need about a year to really get a book out. So last year, as I was finishing up 1 book, I also got my book cover around the same time I was writing it. I went through the editing process last summer. All this was about probably 6 months out before it was actually going to be released. So they do a lot of things ahead of time, which is a lot different than maybe if you're independently published. For example, I just put out my first independent published book, and I took a very different route because it was my project. So I had it edited long ago, but I just finished up the book cover and everything probably right around a month before I actually submitted it to the printer. So it was a little bit of a different process.
That's interesting, the comparison of what you the way if you are putting the book out yourself versus you're working with a publishing house that has a lot of books that they have to put out, and they probably maybe working with, I don't know, 10 or more, maybe 50, depending on how big the house is, 50 to 100 authors or more, then they probably do follow a set schedule. And by this date, we need to have this done by this date, because they're working on more than one book. They're working on maybe dozens of books. Or like a random house could be hundreds of books that they're trying to get out. So they, it is different than what you would do if it was just you working on your own book. I never even thought of that before, but that's a good point that you just brought up. Now, based on your experience, would you say it's common for publishers to sign a new writers to a multi-book deal? Just based on your experience.
I don't know if the word is common, but I would say it's possible. I don't think if anyone's thinking that, I think you should definitely pursue that. I think you just have to, one, have certain things in place. Like most days, you need to have an agent. You almost have to pitch to an agent these days to get an agent. But once you have someone who's on your side who can help pitch you to a larger publisher, and if you show that you have that platform that you can, really, it all boils down to if you have the platform that people will go out and buy your books as soon as they hit the store, that kind of really helps sell you, but also just great writing. So I would say it's possible for a new author, definitely get in there, but you, authors, you need to realize the importance of the marketing behind it all. It's good to write a great book, but you have to show and prove. Like I can tell you, every time I turn in a title to Urban Christian, I have to turn in a marketing plan. So I have to prove that this is what I'm going to do once this book is released. I'm going to go to this conference. I'm going to hit this book signing. I'm going to do a book tour. I'm going to do online radio interviews. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. So
every time, even when you sign a multi-book deal, you have to do that with every new book?
Every book you have to show. So how are you going to market?
Wow. Interesting. Now, before we talk about your new book, and I want to dive into that and talk about When Memories Fade, how did that idea, and I think I asked you this before, but how did you come up with that idea of the Victory Gospel series? How did that come to you?
Well, after I finished writing When Rain Falls, I knew there were two characters that were kind of, I don't know, I guess you could say speaking to me, saying they had their own story. And the third character, which actually, she's the first lady of the church in the book. The church in the book series is called Victory Gospel Church. So I knew the first lady of Victory Gospel Church, so I took the Victory Gospel as the series title for all three books.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Now, how many books, you said there's three books in the series. Do you plan to write more, and will all of them have Candace Johnson as the main character?
Well, no. The first book, When Rain Falls, Candace Johnson is the main character. When Memories Fade, I actually took a different route. Some people with series, they like to continue with characters.
Mm-hmm.
While reading, we'll see Candace again. It's actually a brand new story. It's actually almost a standalone story. Meaning you don't have to read When Rain Falls first. But you do see Candace again. So she comes as a mentor to the young woman who's in When Memories Fade. And the third book is, you'll see Candace and Angel again, but the main storyline is actually about the first lady, whose name is Lenora Freeman. So you kind of see the characters again, but all three books stand on their own. They're their own kind of a mystery suspense story.
Okay, now in When Rain Falls, because it precedes When Memories Fade, and I definitely want to talk about both books, can you tell off-the-shelf listeners, give them a little background on Candace Johnson. What does she do for a living? Where does she live? Is she an only child? What's her family like? And what are some of her passions?
Oh, sure. Candace Johnson is, she's a widow when you start reading the book. She's also the mother of two teenagers. One's a senior, the other one's a sophomore in high school. She's a business owner. So she owns her own beauty salon, and she was an only child. She grew up without her mother. Her mother actually died when she was a young girl due to a domestic violence incident. So Candace was raised by her aunt. So that's kind of the background for Candace.
Was it her? Who's the domestic violence? A boyfriend or father?
It was a boyfriend that killed her mother when Candace
Wow. So she's got a lot of stuff going on that she's got to work through. Now, when the book opens, how old is she and what's happening at the start of When Rain Falls? What's happening to Candace?
And When Rain Falls, she is about 38 years old. And she is, it's been 2 years since her husband passed away. He was a homicide detective. And so she is still kind of mourning him. It's 2 years, but she's still missing having a partner to help raise her two kids. She's kind of still trying to adjust being a single mother. So that's where you find some Candace at in the first part of When Rain Falls. And then she's going to suffer a really big blow. Now the novel's about her losing her best friend to a murder.
Dang, Candace. Whoa, you gave it to Candace?
I did.
Her mom and their husband and that. Oh, my goodness. Poor Candace, man. I could see a reader reading When Rain Falls and seeing the victory, the gospel series, really pulling for her. Like, man, I really want her to something good, great to happen to her. She just keeps having to go through one of these losses, which makes the title so appropriate, When Rain Falls. Now, she struggles with her trust in God at some point, and she starts to lose faith. Is that correct?
Yes, the readers will see she's really struggling and asking God the question, you know, why do you keep taking away my loved ones? She you know, doesn't really believe in God, but she's asking that question of him, which, you know, I think is that any of us in real life would, you know, people may think you shouldn't question God, but sometimes that's how you open dialogue.
Yeah.
How to move forward when something happens to you.
Well, if you don't ask questions, you're not going to get answers. And I think that when people say don't trust God, that, baked into a lot of religion, I think that the root of it, there is a lot of fear that God's going to get angry and punish. This image of this angry, bipolar God who loves and hates at the same time, depending on what we do, it makes people afraid to ask questions because they're like, he's going to get me. But how do you get the answers if you don't ask questions? So I think that's a good thing, to ask questions. You get in. Maybe that's why we go in the situations we go into, so we can start to ask questions and let go of this fear of God that he's going to get mad, this bipolar God is going to get mad and going to get us. So to come out of that, to ask questions so we can get to the truth, to what's really, really, really going on. Now, you said we know she lost her mom when she was a kid, her mother passed on, and then her husband did, and she's now raising two children as a single mother. How much in the book, as a writer, how much did you show the reader her struggle? Because I think people, we all go through struggles when people can either watch a movie or read a poem or a book or something that they can see they're not alone in the clutches of a struggle because somebody else has presented for them, somebody else who's there, which is why support groups are helpful. How much do you dive into that? Do you go deep into it, or you just touch the surface of her struggle?
I think I dive into it pretty deep. I actually went even further than I thought, because what Candace doesn't realize is she's been in such a grief zone. She doesn't realize how much her children have grieved. So that's the part in the novel where you see where her oldest daughter, who was a daddy's girl, was really angry. She really had an anger streak in her. And so I kind of did it that, where mother and daughter, they battled against each other, but it was also because both of them were hurt missing this man in their life, the husband and the father. So I think I go pretty deep, you know, even to where she has to understand she needs to be there for her children because she is all they have.
Okay, okay. Can you introduce our listeners before we start talking about when memories fade? Can you introduce off-the-shelf listeners to some of the supporting cast in When Rain Falls? You've given us a little bit about Candace. You've talked about her children, who she's raising solo. One you said is a sophomore. I forget what grade the other one was in high school. She's 38 at the start of the story. But what, can you introduce some of the supporting cast, and what is it about these characters that helps to keep people interested in the story and continue reading?
Oh, sure. Well, the other main character in When Rain Falls would be the detective. His name is Detective Darnell Jackson. And he is the homicide detective. He really comes to Candace's side to really help her figure out what happened to her friend. He's also just a good guy. He's recently divorced. He moved from California to Charlotte, North Carolina, where the story is set. And he's kind of making his way, trying to get to know the other guys in the Charlotte Police Department. He's kind of an outsider a good bit, so you kind of see his struggles. Some other people around Candace are the people that are in her beauty salon. She has Beulah, who's one of her stylists, is an older woman. She's kind of a mama figure to Candace. Candace actually has a couple of mother figures. Frederica Roberts, she's another older woman. I really got a chance to showcase how it's great to have a mature woman come provide you with wisdom, you know, just really solid wisdom from the experience. I had the chance to do that a good bit in this novel with some of the characters. And then there's her Aunt Maggie. Aunt Maggie raised Candace. But that was the turmoil between those two women because Aunt Maggie had a lot of guilt about her younger sister dying at the hand of a man. So she was kind of really strict. She was a religious, strict, kind of legalistic woman.
Yeah.
She was raising Candace. So they had to come together to kind of deal with their past issues a good bit. So It was a mystery novel, but it probably has, I find that my writing has kind of a woman's fiction feel to it within the mystery. So I think I kind of go deep, but I also, you got a mystery to solve too.
Yes. You know, and Candace has a load, and sometimes it does feel like in life, with the realism of the story, that you're dealing with more than one thing, hopefully nobody more than three heavy things at once, but the importance of working through whatever it is you're dealing with so it doesn't keep coming up. And if something similar comes up again because you've already gone through it, it just doesn't have that power over you anymore. I think that's so important when, like your story, the challenges you show, the character, yeah, the struggle, but you've got to work through it. If you don't work through it, when a similar thing comes up again, you're going to be right back in that struggle. So you got to go all the way through. Now, one reviewer had this to say about When Rain Falls, which I know you said is not so much a drama book, but more of a mystery. But one reviewer had this to say about When Rain Falls. A good and, it's sad to say, rare entry in the Christian black crime fiction genre. Come on, readers and publishers, support this and other bold novelists broadening the African-American Christian market reading niches experiences. Solid debut. Did you, Tyora, first of all, two questions. Did you read a lot of mysteries growing up, number one? And number two, did you deliberately set out to write a Christian crime novel that was different from other books on the market?
Number one, yes. I would say probably 75% of the fiction I read is mysteries, suspense, or thrillers. From my Nancy Drew days, I have always been attracted to a good mystery or a good suspense novel. And two, yeah, I was looking for a Christian fiction novel that I would read. Christian fiction, especially under the African-American genre, kind of blew up. There was a lot of authors that were coming out, and it was great. But I wasn't really, I kind of always didn't want to read a book where it's about a sister relationship. I wanted just, I guess what I was used to reading, a mystery where I was like, well, who did it? What was the person behind this, and what was the reason? I kind of like that logical thinking, just kind of like when we were working on a word puzzle. I like to read a book and have it make me think at the same time. So I did purposely set out to do this, to write suspense under the fiction fiction genre.
Now, another reviewer said about When Rain Falls, she addresses a variety of topics, or I don't know if it's a he or she, but the reviewer addresses a variety of topics like adultery, guilt, domestic violence, and legalism. And they talked about that, about When Rain Falls, that you take on a lot of these topics that some others, especially in the Christian genre, might step back from. Can you give us an example? You talked about the legalism with the aunt. Can you give us some examples of how you address that more specifically in When Rain Falls?
Well, just basically, Aunt Maggie, I guess let me give you a little background on Candace's mom. Candace's mom was one of those women who sought out men to find her security. So she was a beautiful woman. She spent a lot of time being beautiful, and sometimes to Candace's, she would neglect Candace sometimes. So I think her aunt Maggie thought she would not let Candace do things growing up, like have makeup. She had to wear skirts. She was really, she was just very, like, she had to be plain. And you kind of saw that come out in the novel. I mean, Candace ended up having her own beauty salon. So,
isn't that interesting?
She just crashed against all of that. She wanted
to
not be the plain Jane. So that, you know, so I subtly kind of showed that. It sounds like I talked about it a lot in this novel, but it was all really subtle.
Mm-hmm. Which makes it good. So a lot of readers dealing with different things or interested in different, they could, find the book engaging. Before we talk about When Memories Fade, and I got to tell you, the way you responded to the questions When Rain Falls, it makes the book that much more interesting to me. It's more than just a mystery. You touch on a lot of different things in the story, which I appreciate. But before we talk about When Memories Fade, I wanted to ask you, and I like asking authors this question, what did you learn about yourself while you were writing When Rain Falls that you didn't know before you started writing the book?
Some of the same things that we talked about, that when you're in a grieving process, and grief, I talked about grief as the form of death, but grief can come in a job loss, it could be divorce, it could be any major transition that really knocks you off your feet. And sometimes it's okay to ask those questions, why? I think I was definitely one of those people who was like, well, it's just the way it is, I'm not going to question it. But sometimes I think, when you do ask questions, it gives you that opportunity to really be more sincere in your prayer life. You know, like, really have that conversation that you as a person need to have with God yourself. So I think that was another one thing I walked away with. So I can, yeah, definitely say, as I'm writing, I get ministered to as well.
Yeah, you know what? I think the same thing. I agree, and I've heard ministers say that as they're preaching sometimes researching, something comes up to them. You know, I do agree, and I think it's impossible to paint a picture, make a song, write a book, and not have something revealed to yourself. Maybe something about yourself you just didn't want to notice before, and now you see it, but something that comes up. Now I want to talk about When Memories Fade. Can you give our off-the-shelf listeners an overview of When Memories Fade? And then also, is Candace in this story? And if so, because I'm rooting for her. If so, can you tell us what's going on with her in When Memories Fade? So if you could give an overview, and let us know if Candace is in the story.
Yes. When Memories Fade is book two in the Victory Gospel series. It is a standalone story, and the readers will see Candace, young detective, again in the story. The story is about Angel Roberts. He saw her really briefly in When Rain Falls. He actually probably met her grandmother, Frederica Roberts, who was a mentor to Candace in When Rain Falls. So at the opening of When Memories Fade, Frederica has a stroke. And it's very devastating to Angel because Angel has grown up being raised by her grandparents. And the reason why is because her mother left. It was on her fifth birthday, Angel's fifth birthday. Her mother walked out, and she never returned. So it's been about 20 years since her mother went missing. And, you know, in When Rain Falls, I dealt with death, but in When Memories Fade, I'm dealing with a missing person's case. So you don't have that closure. You don't really know what happened to the person. So Angel is 25 years old. She's actually the same age her mother was when her mother went missing.
Wow.
So she's in this mode of, she happens to be a videographer, and she wants to make this documentary. She's been working on it for a few years about her mother's life. And her mother happened to be a really, she was a protege. She was set to be one of those singers. She's looking for a record deal. She had a song. She could have battled Mary J. Blige or Mariah Carey. It was during that time period that her mother was looking for a record deal. But anyway,
okay.
She was missing. So there's this young woman who had great dreams and hopes. No one knew what happened to her. So that's kind of Angel's story. And she comes along, she meets up. There's another main character named Wes Cade. Wes Cade is an investigative reporter. And it just so happens during this time that Angel's looking for a mother, there's another missing girl. So
wow.
Together, they're trying to figure out, are these two African-American missing women? Is it connected? Is it a serial killer or someone? So you kind of have all these different questions that come up that these two young people work together to find out what happened to these two missing women that are 20 years apart.
Wow. Okay. Now, I wanted to ask you, when memories fade, does the title, we know in When Rain Falls, that definitely does, dealing with so much transition, does the title have a special meaning, When Memories Fade? Is it connected to the grandmother's stroke? Did she start to lose some of her memory? I mean, I'm doing this for our off the shelf listeners. I have researched and know more about the story, but for our listeners, can you tell us if the title has a special meaning?
Yes, it does. Actually, it has two meanings. It is related to Angel because her mother walked out when she was 5 years old. She doesn't have that many memories of her mother. She remembers her, but she kind of doesn't remember her. And also there's another person, there's an older person in this novel who was the detective on Angel's mom's case. And he is now in his late 60s, and he's suffering from Alzheimer's.
Oh.
So, and he happens to be Wes Cade's grandfather. So he's actually the first person that Angel seeks out looking for help. And when she discovers that he is suffering from Alzheimer's, it kind of sets her back. And that's when Wes Cade steps in. He wants to help her. And also, it's for some reason or another, Pop, who I call the novel, he kind of remembers the case. With Alzheimer's, they have memories where they go back in time. And for some reason, he kind of remembers this case is one that sticks out to him. That kind of, the title is drawn from telling people about Alzheimer's and also this young woman who is searching to find out more about what happened to her mother.
Yeah, you bring some interesting elements into your stories. I tell you, you really do. You've got the Wes Cade's. He's obsessed with this Alzheimer's, his grandfather who's dealing with Alzheimer's, and I probably just every little memory he can hold on to that he wants to try to, you know, even though he knows it's probably going to be rare, more and more rare that his grandfather's remembering. It's just like, if you just keep pulling for a person. You just keep pulling for something to go the way you want it to go. Even when you see it's not going that way, you just, and it sounds like that's what Wes is doing. Wes is doing, Angel from my research for the interview, she seems more like she's willing to let go, or either she's not dealt with things fully, but she seems a little more willing to me to let go. Now, I know you're the, what memories fade focuses on letting go of the past. Is Angel Roberts, because none of us lives on an island or in a vacuum, is her family in the habit of keeping secrets? So you can have Alzheimer's and not remember things, and you can deliberately not want to remember by just keeping secrets and saying, I know that happened. So it's not like you don't remember it, but I'm going to really try to forget it. You can have Alzheimer's and not be able to remember, and you can purposely try not to remember. So is her family in the habit of keeping secrets?
Yes, I think as you read the novel, you will see that they are. Angel's grandmother kept some things from her. Angel's uncle is a bit of a mysterious character himself. And then Angel is also dealing with, I have kind of a side story going on where Angel is dealing with betrayal. She, you know, not only is her mom missing, but her dad, he's alive. And he kind of went out of her life, too. So she's dealing with, her dad suddenly shows up out of the blue as well. And so she's got that betrayal that she's working with, and also a betrayal from a best friend. So forgiveness actually came up a lot in this novel, even though it's about a missing persons case, that seemed to be the theme that kept coming up, because people do disappoint you. And in some ways, in the first part of the novel, you saw that Angel was kind of angry. She was wondering, well, if her mother did go missing and she just left her on purpose and she was alive, you know, why would she do that to her? Because she really didn't know. She didn't know if she was alive or if she was dead. So she was dealing with that from it too.
I can tell you've read a lot of mysteries, because the things you think of to put in your stories, the first story, Candace's mother, we know, was murdered, domestic violence from Bob's boyfriend. In this one, When Memories Fade, you decided just to leave that open. Like, the reader is like wanting to know not only what is going to happen to these characters, but what happened, what really did happen to her mother. And so you just keep them hanging on it. They keep having the train of pages to find out what happened. And I can tell you've read a lot of mystery, because that is so ingenious. Now, in what ways does the investigative reporter, Wes Cade, how does he push Angel to continue her family investigations? And does it ever start to feel like this is too much for her and she just wants to say, you know what, I'm done with it. I'm not going to push anymore.
Wes is a great guy. He's a really good guy, but he is ambitious. He's like a reporter who really wants to get to the heart of a story. So he does ask questions or push Angel sometimes to areas where she's not ready to deal with. Like, he was the first to start asking her, well, what about your dad? Do you think your dad has something to do with your mother going missing? And she didn't want to deal with that. That wasn't something she wanted her mind to go to. But at some point in the novel, you see that she starts to think, well, maybe I should try to reach out to my dad. So he does things like that. So he kind of pushes her a bit before she's ready. And it really is so he can, not because he's doing it on purpose, or he kind of wants to know. That's the part of his reporter mentality. He wants to know, so he pushes her a little bit to get the information.
So she's only reaching out to her dad, though, to try to solve a case, not to try to restore their relationship. Is that correct?
Yes. She was just basically, she just wants to know, you know, well, why did he leave? You know, he was alive. Why didn't he stick around? Was it a guilty conscience? You know, what was the deal with him? So she now, when she does reach out to him, she gets another whole story that comes back to her family. That's
wow.
When she gets something with his family. He kind of circles back around. She gets an unexpected visit with him.
Wow. Do you think all families have secrets?
I think so. I think some people keep secrets so that another family member may not get hurt, or they keep secrets to keep their image in front of family members, you know, safe, I guess. I think everyone does do that, yes.
Can you, you told us a little bit about Wes, and I agree. You told us a little bit about Wes, and we know his relationship with his grandfather. Can you talk about his relationship with his parents and give us a little bit more background into the type of man that Wes Cade is?
Well, Wes grew up, he was raised by a single mother, and his granddaddy was actually more of the father figure in his life. Now, Wes's dad died when he was a young boy, so he grew up without a dad. But I think his granddad did a great job of keeping him on the straight and narrow. He was a kind of a good boy. His mom kept him in church. I don't want to call him nerdy. He was a cute guy, but he did like to wear his bow ties. Always was just a well-dressed, wanted to get his work done kind of guy when he was growing up, and very inquisitive young man, very ambitious. He definitely wants to be an anchor man one day. So he does what he can to, you know, get those award-winning stories. So he's a driven guy, but he's a good guy.
Okay. Now, I had to ask you this. Now, you said Angel's father left when she was, after her mother went missing. Did he not? He totally left her life when she was a kid.
He didn't even. He did, and there was a reason behind that.
Okay,
yeah,
and I don't want you to tell it.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want you to tell.
It came back to her family keeping secrets. I could basically say the parents thought that her dad had something to do with her mom going missing. So they pretty much moved him to stay away from her. He was kind of like the last person who saw her mother alive. So they blamed him. They thought he did something to her mother.
You know what? I've heard this. They say, if you want to be a great writer, read a lot of books. And maybe it's not only just read a lot of books, but read a lot of books in the genre you want to write in. You are a mystery writer, and it's beyond a shadow of a doubt. I'm listening to you. I'm like, oh, my God, I want to read this story. Because I'm listening to you doing this interview. Like, you, so many what-ifs hanging out there. And not only the what-ifs, but the what motive, and why is this person this way and that person this way, and what's going to happen to this one and what's going to happen to that one. And in both books, When Rain Falls and When Memories Fade, just listening to you respond to the questions, it's like making me sit on the edge of my seat. Now, what is the most true, would you say? Angel and Wes couldn't be more different, or they couldn't be more alike? And could you expound on that?
I think they're probably more different. Wes is the one who takes risks. He's willing to get what he needs. He's very ambitious. Angel is more, She knows that she wants to find things out, but she takes her time about it. She has to feel comfortable moving forward, or she won't move. And she can be She gets upset easily. One of the traits that readers will notice about her is she gets flustered about things. Just because she's grown up in this atmosphere of she knows that people keep things from her, or she kind of trusts people, but there's certain people she doesn't trust. So they're kind of different, but I think in their differences in people, this is a romantic suspense novel too. I mean, they like each other, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're drawn to each other's weaknesses and strengths. I mean, you can see as a couple how Wes would push Angel forward, and then you can see how Angel would quiet Wes down, you know, so you kind of see that dynamic.
Wow. You know what? When you started, and I told myself, don't interrupt her, when you started describing, when I was asking you more different and more like, I pictured Angel just kind of the way you described Wes in my head. And that's the reason that you have to read a book. I thought she was more the go-getter, the go-after-it type person. And I'm sure in some aspects she does. She owns her own business. So I don't know. You have to read the story and then come away with it. But it's interesting when you describe them. I was thinking to myself, man, I just saw it totally flopped, totally the opposite way. But each reader has to read the story themselves and come away with, you know, their own perceptions of the story. And it's definitely a very interesting story, not only to care about the characters, which you have to have, you know, write a book that people care about the characters and want to see what's going to happen to them, but also this mystery, what happened to the mom? There's just so many different elements in the story that could keep you interested and turning the pages. How much research did you do while preparing When Memories Fade? Did you research how cases are investigated? Did you research how journalists get to the heart of the story? How much research did you do as you were preparing to write When Memories Fade?
I probably did much more research on When Memories Fade than the first book because, like you said, I had to understand what happens when a person goes missing, what's that process like, how do you search for them? You know, when do you actually stop looking for them? I also looked into what a stroke, because I had Angel's grandmother have a stroke in the first chapter. How does that process look? What was the rehabilitation time? What type of stroke was it? I looked into Alzheimer's. What goes into what happens as the memory, your brain is basically deteriorating. What's the toll of the caregiver? You know, when do you decide how much is it you can do, or when is it time to send it to a nursing home facility? So yeah, there's a lot of research in this novel. And it was actually good research because, you know, I have aging parents, and I found all the research actually really helpful just from my knowledge. You know, because I have heart disease that runs in the family. I have dementia that runs in the family. So good information to share in the novel and also to know.
I wanted to touch on, for our off-the-shelf listeners, I like to give the listeners, those who want to be authors, like when I asked you, how did you get your publisher, I like our listeners to walk away with things, not only to know about the book itself or to learn more about the author, but also things that they can take and in practical ways, use it to help them achieve a dream or do something that they want to do as they move forward. That said, When Memories Fade, how part of it in letting go of the past so that you can move into a marvelous future, how do the characters Angel and Wes show readers how they can do that? And then I wanted to piggyback on that, and just from your own experience and your observations from a nonfiction standpoint, do you have any tips you can offer to our listeners if they're caught up in the past and they need to move forward?
I'm sure I can say by the time you get to the end of the novel, you will see where both Angel and Wes, they've learned that forgiveness is not something about letting other people off the hook, but it's really for their healing to move forward. So I say you see that from both characters. And just as I said, for just a nonfiction view, I think a lot of people will let forgiveness sit. And when you let forgiveness just kind of sit there, it develops into bitterness. And as you are more bitter, you can't move forward because that other person may have moved on with their life, but you're still stuck holding a grudge or just stuck in that place of where someone hurts you. And you can't stay there. Well, you can't grow that way. You can't move forward that way. So the best thing to do is not be letting someone off the hook that they did you wrong. It's basically so that you can move and go into the purposes that are for you. So move past that. It's actually all a part of just growing to be more mature. People do things and you have no control over, but what you do have control over is your reaction, your attitude, and how you're going to proceed forward. So that you can take control over.
Can you give us a few tips or signs for any of our listeners? Because we get up and we shower or bathe and go to work if we have jobs, and we take care of our families, and we do things. We go to church and we do, or for those who do, or whatever worship center person goes to or doesn't go to. So it seems like our lives are advancing, and we can look in the mirror and see we've gotten taller if we're in that age, or we're still getting taller, or our hair is turning gray. We see changes. So it looks like we are advancing from a physical perspective. We're getting older. It looks like we are advancing, but we could still be stuck in the past somewhere. It can be tricky to notice that, though, I think, Tyora, because we see the physical changes. We see ourselves cooking. We see ourselves reading the scriptures. We see ourselves doing these things. So we think, I am advancing. And we don't see that. No, but in this area, you're stuck. You're stuck from something that happened 20 years ago. What are some ways that we can know I'm stuck in this area?
Well, I guess if your grievance is against another person, if that person's name is said or you see them, that you're aware of your reaction to them, if you're aware of your attitude to them. Are you extra nasty to this person when you really don't need to, when they just said hello to you? I guess you have to really be aware of your inner being, how you act, what your thoughts are. I mean, everyone can't tell what everyone's thinking, but you know what you're thinking.
Right.
I think you just need to be, and it's quick for those things to be a habit for them. And I will say this, I am a hesitant against some people sometimes. I've had this happen to me where they're like, they'll go about things and they'll say things to other people and say, I'm keeping a keeping it real attitude. I'm like, well, if you're mean-spirited to the other person and you didn't edify them, I don't know if you were keeping it real or if you were just striking out at them. I think everyone needs to understand what place you come from when you're talking to other people. You might have something that you're harboring against someone, but you need to deal with. And I think people, you can go through life for years, and it happens in families that, a family reunion and people are ignoring each other. You're like, why?
you said it.
I don't know why they ignore each other.
You said it, and we had another guest on who had a real life experience that was not good, and it's easy to get stuck. And we talk about forgiveness, and until you do it, you can't move on. I don't even know if when people hurt us, sometimes if they fully grasp what they did. I don't even if they intend to hurt you. I don't know if they fully grasp what they did. Because they've had stories of people who've gone to prison for murder, and it was years before they grieved and fully grasped what they did. Maybe somebody doesn't even really know just how much they injured you, but to move on, the importance of doing that and not saying, well, I'm physically going to Bible study or Sunday school or whatever, but you still haven't forgiven. And you can think you have because you're doing these things, which is where religion can get us into trouble, because you're doing these things and you think, I have forgiven, but you haven't. You're just doing these things. You still haven't forgiven. And what you said, another guest has said that. How do you feel when you get in these certain situations? That's a clue. That's a clue.
Yeah, that's a clue. And you can't ignore them, yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, you have so long supported writers and other creative arts, as I said at the beginning of Off the Shelf, and I so commend you. When did you decide? I mean, for years you were supporting others. When did you decide to branch out and start creating websites? You supporting other people. But when did you decide to branch out and start creating websites to promote writers? Before, I remembered your websites were more like a community base for mothers. You had one for mothers. I can't remember the name of it. You had another one. I don't know if it was for business women. But you had these community websites. When did you say, you know what, I'm just going to focus on creating websites to help promote writers?
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah, I had a website back in the late 90s called the Doe Network.
Yeah,
it was the Daughters of Eve Network. And I met a lot of writers during that. And my goal was to build a community, online community for women of color. And I had a lot of all types of articles, whether it was business, family related.
Yes.
But I let that go in 2004, and it was interesting at the time. I decided that same year to actually put up my own personal website, put up my own personal writing, which were just kind of devotions and articles. And then the following year, 2006, is when I started writing on fiction. But it was because of the Doe Network that other people started asking me, well, do you build websites for other people? And that was just a hobby. I love doing it. I spent my evenings putting up articles and just branching out that website, and never really crossed my mind to do this for pay. So, yeah, it was because of that website that people came to me and said, I would like you to build a website for me, and that's kind of how it all started.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Interesting. Where, with just about 2 minutes left, where can our off-the-shelf listeners get your amazing books, When Memories Fade and When Rain Falls? Where can they get copies of your books, Tara?
You can get those in most bookstores. They're available on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. There's also on the Kindle and the Nook and the iBook as well.
Are you on any social networks? I know you have a page on Facebook, which is just wonderful, with a lot of tips and advice. Are you on any social networks? And if you are, can you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Sure. You can search my name, Tyora Moody. I come up on Facebook. I'm on Twitter and Pinterest, LinkedIn, Google+, and Instagram.
Okay, so just go look for Tyora Moody, and again, her website is tyoramoody.com. That's tyoramoody.com. Please, I don't know how anybody could listen to this interview and not want to go out and get copies of When Rain Falls and her latest book released, When Memories Fade. And give us the title of the self-published book you put out.
I'm sure the self-published book is Deep Fried Trouble, and it's the first book in a new series. It's called The Eugenia Patterson Mystery.
Deep Fried Trouble. And she's an avid mystery reader, and she is very, very good at what she does. Very, very good at what she does. She also does author promotions, virtual tours, author websites at Ty Web and Creations. So our authors here at Off the Shelf can check her out. And readers, please go support her and get a copy of When Memories Fade and When Rain Falls. Thank you, Tyora. I love, love, love this interview. So I'm so glad that we got to connect, and hope you feel better and get over your cold.
right away. Thank you to our off-the-shelf listeners for being here with us. Please come back next Saturday. Tell your friends, your colleagues, your family, everybody. Tune in to off-the-shelf Saturday mornings, 11 o'clock in the morning, Eastern Standard Time. And as I always tell you, you are so awesome. You are just amazing. You're incredible. Go out and create a fabulous day for yourself today. See you next Saturday, 11 o'clock. Tara, I'll shoot you an email. Bye for now.
No, thank you. Bye-bye.